I'm Sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, Keto Lovelies, and welcome to episode number 221. And I'm back with the second part of my Keto Curious series, where I am talking about my take on how to get started with keto, or maybe how to go back to the basics and have a little bit of a rethink about your approach. Last week, we started with the who from the five W's, and that was a bit of a prequel before getting started on the nitty-gritty, because I really wanted you to think about who you are and the best approach that is likely to work for you, because it is so different for everybody. And what's paramount to me is that you make a success of this and that you find a way of ketoing that works really well for you, because it really is all about making keto fit you and not the other way around. I wanted you to start thinking about creating a journal and just taking note of your day to day. You know, what's going on with you? What are you eating? We're not talking super details here. We're not talking tracking in an app. Really just making a note of what you're eating, how you feel about it. And some things I forgot to mention that it's really handy to put into this journal is, how is your sleep? How is your mood? What are your stress levels? All this information can come in really useful later on when you're trying to figure out where things may be going a little bit awry, or you're wanting to make some tweaks. You know, you can start to make some associations. You know, maybe it's the week before your period and you're just really, really hungry and the cravings are out of control, and you start to see that that's happening every month. Well, that's a great example of where you start making some adjustments. You know, not only are we all very different, and so each of our approaches is going to be a little bit different, but within our own approach, things change. Things change on a short-term basis and things change over the long term as well. I can almost guarantee that how you start won't be how you're ketoing a year from now and 5 years from now. And there is so much talk about macros. You will no doubt encounter the keto police at some point. And you'll likely hear a lot of talk about ketosis. That, of course, is where the name keto comes from. It's about being in a ketogenic state. But again, I don't want you to think about that too much just yet. In fact, ideally, don't think about it at all. Just think about the foods. How are you feeling when you eat different foods? We're going to go into talking about that in this episode. This episode is all about the what of keto. So tracking macros, testing your ketones. Honestly, I would just leave that till later. Try and avoid the keto police. Try and avoid the labels. You might hear things like, oh, it sounds like you're dirty keto, or clean, lazy keto, if it fits your macros. Honestly, we really are getting into the realms of bullshittery here. Maybe that's a bit harsh. I guess they provide a certain kind of framework, but in my experience, it just seems to give people ammunition to start getting judgy and get into the whole us and them thing. Just like any community, there's a lot of that that goes on, and you'll learn. You'll learn if you spend time on Facebook, which groups you feel comfortable in, which you don't. I've been a member on and off of so many different groups, and I can now count on one hand the number of groups that I feel comfortable spending time in. But again, these are things for another week. It's really difficult to know what to mention and when to mention it. The order gets a bit tricky. There are things that I want to warn you about, tell you about, but don't necessarily want to talk about in detail yet. But basically, when it comes to keto rules, there is only one rule book, and that's the one that you create for yourself. And as I said before, it's going to change over time. Now, we spoke a little bit last week about figuring out the type of person you are, who you are, and your approach. Talked about figuring out what your Gretchen Rubin tendency is and what you're like with accountability. Can you hold yourself accountable? Do you need some external accountability? Or do you just like to make your own rules up as you go along? Do you like to research and question everything? These are all important things to figure out how best to approach keto. But the other thing is, practically, how do you get started? Now, what kind of person are you? Are you the jumping in head first, rip the band-aid off type person? Or are you somebody who needs to take it a little bit more slowly? Ease yourself in gently, step by step. And there are pros and cons to each of these approaches, and neither is right or wrong. So if you're the former, if you're that person who likes to rip the band-aid off and jump straight in, this has a lot of positives. It kind of gets you on the fast track and you're going to get over that hump quicker. It can also be a great way, if you're this kind of person, to harness maybe a limited pool of motivation and willpower. Now, if you're somebody who's done one or countless of these sort of quick fix type diets, you'll know that they're often 2 weeks, maybe a 30-day plan. And, you know, one of the reasons for that is that we can, most of us can summon up enough energy and enough motivation to stick to something for a short period of time. So if that's the kind of person you are, the jumping straight in and going a bit hardcore could well suit you. The potential downside is that maybe you're going to feel those cravings a bit more intensely. You are effectively going cold turkey, of course. It depends, of course, what your starting point is and how much you're going to be restricting. But the chances are that there's going to be a fairly dramatic change if you go from a fairly high carb straight into a ketogenic approach. So that takes me to the step-by-step approach. Now, if you're somebody who likes to ease in, you know, I think of me going into the sea. I quite often go with a friend of mine, and I'm the kind of person now anyway, I guess I wasn't to start with, but I go straight in. I lean into the cold, I embrace it, and I get that initial breathtaking, getting over the cold bit, over and done with quickly. She goes in really slowly. If she could go in inch by inch, she probably would. And that's just how she does it. That's how I do it. So we're all very, very different. So if you are somebody who wants to take it a bit more gently, step by step, you know, the positives of this are it does feel a little bit less dramatic. You're easing into it. It's also a good way, if you're very frugal, of clearing out your cupboards. It is a good idea, as much as you can. And this is something we're going to be talking about in another episode. But it depends who you share your house with and what maybe you're going to have to keep in your cupboards. But as much as you can, clearing out your cupboards of the things you don't want to be eating anymore, at least those things that are going to tempt you, is really, really helpful. But maybe you don't just want to give them all away or throw them away. And maybe you actually want to work your way through at least some of the more healthy things that you have. Well, easing in slowly is a way to do that. And so the kind of positive, negative from a craving point of view, and it's going to depend on the individual, but it's probably going to feel a little bit easier because you're taking things out maybe one at a time. You know, maybe you choose to remove one of the foods that are going to be on the no list one at a time and getting used to that before you take on another one. There doesn't need to be any hurry to this. It's totally up to you. But a lot of people do find it easier to kind of get it over and done with a bit faster. Because the other problem is, if you take it slowly, is that you're potentially going to be drawing out that withdrawal agony. Yes, it might not be too full on, but a lot of people struggle with that. You know, I know many, many people who've done the whole, let's be really good, quote unquote, good during the week, Monday to Friday, and then the weekend, all bets are off. And overall, most people come to realize it just kind of prolongs the agony and makes it more difficult for you. But it's up to you. What's going to work for you? That's the best approach to take. Now, before we get stuck in to the what, to the food, I just want to make a quick mention. I mentioned it then about the cravings. I just want to talk about keto flu. Now, this is a term that I absolutely loathe. I can't bear it. Let's call it what it is. It's carb withdrawal. That's what you're feeling. But you are potentially not going to feel great for the first week or two. Again, it really does depend what your starting point is and what you're jumping into. If you're eating a lot of processed and refined carbohydrates, if you have a really high carb diet and you're jumping straight into a keto diet, well, that is a dramatic shift and your body is almost definitely going to react fairly negatively, at least for 2 or 3 days, but quite possibly longer. It takes a while for it to get over that shift and to rebalance, get you back to feeling normal again. It's a good new normal, but it's going to take a bit of time. You're asking your body to adapt to a different fuel source, basically, and that's quite a big ask. So it's very likely you're going to feel a bit more tired than usual, probably, almost definitely, a bit irritable, maybe a headache, some brain fog, struggling with the motivation, almost definitely sugar and carb cravings, might even feel a little bit sick or dizzy, and maybe get some muscle cramps. Now you can help mitigate this. There are a few things you can do. One of the main causes, actually, is a loss of water and electrolytes from your system. When you start keto, you're going to be losing quite a lot of water from your body. You'll hear people mention, if you have that initial good weight loss, oh, it's just water weight. Well, who cares? You know, it's still weight that you've lost. But yes, you're losing water. And as that gets flushed out, it flushes out some electrolytes with it. So it is important to replace those. Make sure you hydrate yourself well. So do drink plenty of water during the day on top of the normal drinks, beverages that you have, like coffee and tea. But the important thing is to add some salt. You can add some salt to your drinks, add it to your food, but maybe in that first week at least, actually measure out 1.5 to 2 teaspoons of salt and make sure you're consuming that during the day. You know, you can just take a little pinch, swallow it down with some water, keep up the salt levels. That really is going to help. You can take some electrolyte mixes. I'm hesitant to recommend those because, as I will mention later, ideally I'd like you to stay away from too many sweeteners and things like that. In my opinion, it's probably better just to focus on getting enough salt. I do think it's a good idea to take some magnesium. A lot of people find a bit of an increase in cramps. If you've ever suffered from restless leg syndrome, that can increase. And keeping on top of your electrolytes really helps with that. So salt, magnesium, potassium in general, you can get from your food, things like leafy greens, avocados, you're going to get plenty that way. But it's something to be aware of, and it's something to do right from the get-go, because it really is going to help with that carb withdrawal. Let's call it carb withdrawal. Let's stop calling it keto flu. I just really don't like the negative connotations of that, and kind of putting the blame on keto, where the blame really lies with those carbs that you're withdrawing from. And then the other thing, of course, that helps is just to be indulgent with your food, especially those first couple of weeks. Again, this is something that you'll likely come across, the whole fat versus protein, and you shouldn't have too much fat. If you want to lose weight, you should be using your body fat and calorie counting and all that stuff. Please try and avoid that, at least for now. Please try and avoid people who start getting all judgy and pointing the finger and getting all keto police on you. As I said before, this transition quite possibly is going to be a bit difficult for your body. So go easy on it. Keto food is delicious. So embrace that and enjoy all the things. Enjoy not having to feel guilty about putting butter on your vegetables, in having bacon and eggs for breakfast, in eating all that full fat dairy. Don't go hungry. Really enjoy your food and work on feeling satisfied. That's really going to help balance out this carb withdrawal. And the other thing from a mindset point of view is, where is your focus here? Think less about the things that you can't eat and think more about all the things that you can. So finally, we are getting to the what. What can you eat? Well, I'm not going to spend time reading off great long lists of what you can and can't eat. Other people have done it already and have done it so much better. So I'm just going to point you in that direction, and you can go and look at these lists for yourself. One of the best resources for all sorts of information is dietdoctor.com. And they have a very good printable PDF that I've got in front of me now, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes so you can print that off or go and have a look at it online. They also have lots of great information, lots of infographics, which are fantastic, showing you which are the higher and lower carb vegetables and how much protein are in different foods. And I don't know what you're like, but I really like those sort of infographics. Makes it very easy to see quickly and clearly. So I really recommend those, and I'll give you the links so that you can go and have a look for yourself. But in brief, what's on the green list? And I do think the kind of the traffic light system is a good one to use. And you'll see all sorts of lists out there based on this system. And the one I'm looking at now is really just a sort of green and red. But as you go a bit further down the line, you really will find that you have some green things, some red, let's not ever have these if we can possibly avoid it. And then there'll be some yellow things in the middle that you need to approach with a bit more moderation. But that's the kind of detail for another day. What's on the green list? Well, all those delicious proteins, so meat, eggs, seafood, tofu, if you're a vegetarian. Anybody can eat tofu, of course, but I don't think it's the most delicious thing. Vegetables, all sorts of vegetables, but in general, think above ground, leafy greens and above ground vegetables and herbs. There are some sort of half in, half out type vegetables, things like celeriac and turnips, swede or rutabaga, I think it's called, in the States. And personally, I don't get too hung up on carrots. What else is on the green list? Well, fats. This is a low carb, high fat diet, of course. So all the saturated fats, things like lard and tallow, butter, the fruit oils, olive oil, avocado, nut oils, and coconut oil. Nuts and seeds are good, and the nut and seed butters. Just make sure you look at the ingredients and avoid the ones with sugar. This is a prime example, but we're not going to worry about that now, of one of those foods that you might have to, probably will have to, put in the yellow category at some point. And another one of those is dairy. But for now, just embrace it. All the full fat dairy, cheese and butter and cream, delicious. If you eat dairy, then really enjoy it. It's going to help get you through this carb withdrawal period, especially. Fruit is generally something that you will avoid, but you'll be pleased to hear that berries are on the low carb list, and so are olives and avocados. Condiments, there are some clear yeses. Oils that we've already mentioned, vinegar, herbs and spices, lemon, lime juice, mustard. Mayonnaise is great if you can make it yourself at home or if you can find some that uses the healthy oils. Let's jump into the red list and things that we're looking to avoid. The biggest problem comes from sugar, starch, and seed oils. And these are the things that we really want to focus on avoiding, especially when it comes in a really processed and refined form. But sugar comes in all sorts of forms because manufacturers often try and disguise sugar under more healthy sounding ingredient names. I'll find one of these lists and I'll add it to the show notes. Starches. Well, this is the biggie, and this is probably the biggest category that most people focus on a lot. Oh, there's no way I could do keto because I could never give up bread. Bread, of course, is high up on the list of the starches, and it also ticks that processed and refined box that you really don't want. So what do we mean by starches? Well, it's most of those below ground tubers, so things like potatoes and all the forms, obviously, that they come in. Cereals, grains, rice, and all the processed things that come out of that. Bread, we mentioned already, cereal, pasta. Then a lot of things that you're quite probably have thought of as being really healthy. Things like oats. I know I went through a long phase of having porridge for breakfast every morning, then wondering why I just wanted to have a nap mid-morning. Well, this is why. This is the problem. Starchy foods very rapidly turn into sugar when you digest them. So sugar, starch, kind of all comes in the same category. And of course, fruit. Most fruit, I'm afraid, is also on the list. Very, very sweet. And talking of sweet, this is where we get into sweeteners. And this is where it gets really tricky. And I'm going to record an episode with my good friend Kim Howerton talking about some of the ingredients that you'll come across in keto products, some of these more processed foods, and the drinks and beverages that you might be wanting to consume, all those diet sodas and creamers and fancy things you want to put in fancy coffees, all that kind of stuff. It's really tricky. In an ideal world, just cut them out for now. But I know that is maybe just not going to be doable for you. What you can do, and I think this is a really good piece of advice from the fasting method. If you've listened to the fasting method podcast with Megan and Nadia, what they recommend with things like this is to include them as part of your meal. Because there are issues with consuming sweeteners, it does produce an insulin response for a lot of people. And one of the practical problems that that causes is that it stimulates appetite. And you don't really want to be doing that all day long. Try and keep it within your meals and it will mitigate the impact somewhat. And that is another really important point. We are going to be talking more about this in the when episode, but this is something, like I was saying, about the order of things. It's very important to mention at the start here, what you really need to do from the get-go is to only eat at mealtimes. No snacking. No snacking whatsoever. The only food that goes in your mouth is the food that you eat at mealtimes. And that is the biggest thing to try and adopt from the get-go. It really will make a difference, and it really can help mitigate some of the things that you're eating that you might feel at some point that you need to give up. You might not need to if you keep them at mealtimes. Most of the problems that come up with these kind of foods, and it is usually things like nuts and cheese are the biggest culprit, but those sweet drinks and all these kinds of things are the kinds of foods that we tend to snack on and eat as extras. And the biggest things we're working on with keto is getting your insulin down. And you're just not going to do that if you're eating on and off all day long. So only eat at mealtimes. How many mealtimes? Well, that's up to you. If you currently eat 3 meals a day, then go with 3 meals a day. A lot of people find that their appetite starts going down quite quickly, and a very, very typical meal frequency, I would say the most typical, is 2 meals a day. But for now, for starting, I would probably go with 3 meals a day, unless you're the kind of person that likes skipping breakfast. I don't tend to eat until late morning, noon at the earliest. That's when I tend to have my first meal. That works really well for me. I'm a 2 meal a day kind of person, and I was pretty well from the get-go. But if you like breakfast, have breakfast. And we are going to be talking in a bit more detail later on about some of the practicalities and the potential problems that you might run into and finding yourself overly hungry at a time when the right food isn't available to you is one of those potential problems. So starting out with 3 really good meals a day is probably more likely to keep you going and keep you satisfied and not ever feeling too hungry. If you are finding that you're craving snacks between meals, well, the chances are good that you're not hungry. We'll talk a bit about what is actually behind snacking another time. But if you are hungry, if you're genuinely hungry and you need something to eat between your meals, then your meals need to be a bit bigger. You know, we are designed to go for fairly long periods of time without food. And it is good to get hungry. That's the natural rhythm and flow of things. You know, you eat your breakfast, you feel satisfied. You don't feel hungry for 2 or 3 hours, and then you start getting hungry again and you build up an appetite for your lunch. Same thing happens between lunch and dinner. And then you fast overnight while you sleep and you're ready to go again at breakfast time. And the problem with all these high carb foods and sugar is that it really messes with those signals, and our brain starts sending us these messages like we're hungry when we're not. When your blood sugar is up and down all the time, you don't feel good. That's the trouble. Your blood sugar shoots up when you eat these things, these high carb foods. But what goes up must come down. And when it comes down, that's when your brain is going to start sending you messages to go and get that blood sugar up again. And you're just on this constant roller coaster, up and down, up and down. And the knock-on effect that has on your physical and mental health. This is what it's all about. This is what keto is going to work to sort out and to fix. So how to put it all together? What are you going to eat? This is where keeping it simple is going to help you on so many different levels. keeping it simple, sticking as much as you can to real whole foods just makes life easier. You're not having to look at ingredient lists and ask whether something is keto or not. You're going to make life a lot easier for yourself. And yes, it's going to be difficult to get over the cravings for some of these processed and refined foods that you're used to. But if you can keep it simple, you'll not only make it easier for yourself, but you'll get to find out what you like and what your body likes. And so this is where we come back to that journal that I mentioned last week. And I'm not saying don't use a food tracking app. The problem I have with taking that approach is that it's really difficult not to let the data drive your choices. If you get into plugging in the different macros that you're supposed to be eating for the day, then if you're not careful, you start eating to your macros rather than focusing on the food. And there is huge benefit to tracking exactly what you eat in these apps later on when it comes to tweaking and refining if you come up against some problems. But, and this is the thing I want to avoid, is that I want you to focus on the food and your relationship with that food and how it makes you feel. Because it's important. It's important if we're going to make this work long term. And you'll know if you've ever got into calorie counting, which I'm guessing most of you have, once you start learning all those things, it's really difficult to look at a food without having that framework, without judging a food before you eat it based on its calorie count, or now we'll be basing it on its carb count. And there are so many foods where it's really debatable on that score anyway. So that's why I just, for now at least, just want you to think about the foods and how you feel about them. So an example might be, for breakfast, I had bacon and eggs, and they were delicious. I really enjoyed eating them. And they left me feeling full. I found that I wasn't hungry until lunchtime. I didn't feel like I wanted to snack. And so you're writing down what you ate, when you ate it, and think a bit about, as I mentioned before, the environment. Do you sit down and eat at a table? Are you eating it on the run? Do you take some time to eat it? Are you just grabbing things out of the containers because you haven't got time? Or are you properly plating it up, sitting at the table and taking some time to eat it? But then also how it makes you feel. Things you eat that you find really satiating, other things you find that aren't so satisfying and are leaving you a bit hungry. You know, some people find the fattier proteins more filling. Some people prefer the leaner proteins. Some people have come from years of avoiding fat and find it really difficult to start embracing fatty things. Or maybe they just don't like the flavor or the texture or whatever. This is where I just want you to think about all these things. How do you feel about some of the staple vegetables? Do you love the brassicas, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower? Or do they make you a bit gassy, give you a bit of tummy ache? Sometimes they do with me. All these things are useful to know. And really think about the taste. What you will start noticing is the natural sweetness in things. Things like bell peppers, Brussels sprouts actually, and then other things like dairy. You'll notice the natural sweetness in cream, so much more so than you did before. So that's where it's really going to help if you can at least limit sweeteners, but ideally cut them out and really start to appreciate the natural sweetness in foods. One of the places this is really difficult is with your drinks, your beverages. And that's a stumbling block for a lot of people, especially if you like milk and sugar in your coffee and tea. Well, up the fat content, so switch out the milk for cream. A lot of people also like some of the nut milks. And then really try and cut out altogether if you can, but certainly try and lower the amount of sweet you put in. And there are some tricks for this. Salt in coffee, for example, cuts the bitterness. And you can use things like cinnamon and vanilla to give some interest, but also some natural sweetness. But the other thing to do if you do use sweetener is just to try and lower it a bit. And you can do that one grain at a time if you like. Adopt the Kaizen approach, and James Clear with his Atomic Habits, it's all about taking tiny, tiny steps. So say you're used to having 2 teaspoons of sugar in your coffee and you're going to replace that with sweetener. Or maybe you're going to take the step-by-step approach and stay with the sugar and take it down gradually until you have no sugar at all. That would be fantastic. But say you're replacing that with sweetener. So we're starting with 2 teaspoons of sweetener. Well, if you just take the tiniest amount out of that second teaspoon every day, I'd be willing to bet that within a week or two, you'll be down to a teaspoon of sweetener without really noticing the difference. That's certainly how I cut the milk and sugar from my coffee years and years ago, way before I was keto. I just gradually reduced it. Until I was literally putting about 3 granules of sugar into my coffee. And then there was what felt like a huge leap actually from just those few grains to no sugar at all. But once I'd done it, there was no going back. But if you can't avoid the sweet things and there's no way you're giving them up, try as much as you can to keep them within your meal times. Now, where to go to for recipe ideas? Well, again, it depends how much you like cooking, how complicated you want to make it. You really can keep it very, very simple. Take a protein food, add some vegetables, then add some fat to that to make it more tasty. You know, maybe a lovely creamy sauce, some butter on your vegetables, a nice dressing on a salad. It really doesn't have to be more difficult than that. Take a protein food, take some vegetables, and then make it a bit tasty with some sauces, some dressings, some herbs and spices. The simpler you keep it, the easier it is in so many ways. And breakfast can be, if you're like me and you like to have typical breakfast foods at breakfast, I have bacon, egg, sausage every day and love it. But breakfast doesn't have to look like that. It could be some leftovers from yesterday. It can be whatever you like. It's just another meal. It's the meal that you use to break your overnight fast. And the places to find recipes are endless. So I'm just going to drop a couple in the show notes from one of my favorites, Have Butter Will Travel. If you listen regularly to the podcast, you'll know Dan and Erica from the Keto Foodie Favorites episodes, but they have some lovely recipes on their website and their books are also great. Really nice, simple keto dinners. And we had Carolyn Ketchum on the podcast recently. So her website came to mind, All Day I Dream About Food, and there are thousands of recipes that you can find there. And obviously she's got her books as well. But there are so many sites, so many books, so many places you can find recipe ideas. It would be impossible to list them all. So ask for recommendations. Ask people who you know are keto, you know, what are their favorite recipes? Where do they get their favorite recipes from? People are always happy to share, and you will find very quickly in any group that you join on Facebook, all sorts of recommendations. So enjoy discovering all the new recipes and delicious meal ideas that are out there. So that's it for this week. I did want to be way more concise than I have been. As per usual, I've rambled all over the place. I hope you can get something useful from it. You probably realised by now that I'm the kind of person who talks around things a bit and focuses on how you feel about things. But I really, really want you to get to grips with making this work for you. Because that, to me anyway, just seems to get rid of so many of these stumbling blocks, so many of the things that people put up as hurdles. Well, I don't want to eat eggs for breakfast, so don't. But I don't really like very fatty foods. Well, that's okay. You don't have to eat really fatty foods. There are ways of getting enough fat into your diet that we'll be able to find. It doesn't have to be a super, super high fat diet if that's not what you like. In fact, it's probably best if it's not. It depends a lot on what your idea is of a lot of fat or a little fat. So different for everybody. I've never really been a low, low fat person. But for somebody who's coming from a place where everything was low fat, you know, fat was the devil, so they had the low fat version of everything, yeah, they're going to struggle a lot more. Whatever those potential stumbling blocks are, there is probably a way around them. Now, I can't magically make it okay to keep all those high carb foods. That's one thing that it's just not going to be possible to do. But for almost everybody, if you can construct the perfect keto diet for you, after a few months, you're not going to miss them. Or at least you're going to find living without them much more manageable. I promise you, it does get easier, and it gets easier very quickly. And it will get easier far more quickly if you can find the foods that you really like and the foods that like you back. And that brings me handily to this week's top tip. And this was so perfect to use that I just had to use it. And this top tip actually comes from Megan Pfeffer. And if you listen regularly, you will know her from not only from her episode where she shared her story, but also from the bite-sized nutrition episodes that she does. And this is her catchphrase. And it is, eat food that loves you back. And this is the big takeaway from this what week, and that is to figure out what that food is. The food that you love and the food that loves you back. Because sadly, not all of it does. Once you have a better idea of that, you can start getting stuck into all the macro stuff and shaping it into your perfect keto diet. But for now, just focus on embracing and exploring all the different foods and see how you get on with them. And then we can take what you like and start refining it later. But don't worry for now too much about the carb count, about how much protein is in it, how much fat is in it. Make sure you're getting some delicious protein with every meal. Add some vegetables, add something fatty and delicious, and you really can't go far wrong. Just keep your food to your meal times, no snacking. And that's it. I'm sure when I come to edit this in a minute, I will think of many ways that I could have made this into a far more concise episode. But there you have it. I'm not entirely sure what we're going on to next week. We will find out next week. But for now, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorites that I use for the end quotes, and that's James Clear. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner or an expert, as long as you're on the path. If a beginner is on the path, all they need is time. If an expert is off the path, they won't be an expert for long. So get yourself on that keto path, but make it as pleasant and smooth a path to walk along as you can. It doesn't need to be full of potholes. Thank you for staying with me right to the very end if you're still here. I hope you have a lovely weekend. I hope you have a lovely week. And I will see you back here, same place, same time, next week. In the meantime, please take very, very good care. And I'll see you soon. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.